Hello and welcome to Penalty Box Radio and ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us behind the glass. And, wow, it's another evening of potential winter weather. We can't escape it, Glenn.
We can't. I know.
It is very unique and interesting. But here's what I want, though. I need like multiple days of cold so we can get some of these ponds to freeze over and we can get some pond hockey going. That's what
there
I truly need.
I would come watch. I don't really trust myself to get out.
You would.
There,
I know how blue your lips turn when the air conditioning's too cold.
I know, Justin, but I've changed. I haven't changed at all.
I was about to say. Okay.
I'll be shivering in about 15 minutes. But, yeah, when it's bitter cold, I need, like, snow or I need something pretty to look at. I don't like it just to be bitter cold.
Right.
Because for some reason, now this is going to sound insane. I don't know if I've said this out loud to anyone ever.
Oh.
But when there's snow on the ground, I can go walk all around my neighborhood, and I do. I'll tromp through 7 inches and not feel that cold. Now, I could go wear the same outfit when it's not snowy, and I'm, like, very dramatic, and I'm like, it's too cold. So I think I'm so distracted by the snow that I don't feel as cold because it should feel more cold in the snow. But in my brain and my body, it doesn't.
It gives you the warm fuzzies inside.
It
and
that's enough
to keep you warm.
That's enough to keep me warm. That's it. That's
wow.
The answer.
It's a mind game is what
Thanks,
it is.
Thanks, Dr. Bradford.
That'll be one nickel.
Oh, boy.
Hope
oh,
can
boy. I don't
that.
Care cash.
All right. Well, from last week to this week, it has been an interesting little swing for the Nashville Predators.
A couple of things have changed.
Well, a couple things. I mean, I do have some jewelry on a certain finger.
He looks very married today. It was the first thing I noticed when I walked in the door.
How does one look married?
You look like a husband now.
Because I am.
I even saw that before I saw your ring, which I absolutely love.
Oh, thank you.
That is like one of the best male rings I've ever seen.
Should I tell the listeners what it is?
You should.
Okay.
And I hope you've tweeted out a picture.
I will. I want to wait for
the
professional
pictures.
Oh, you want to
wait
for
the
really good
yep.
pictures. But it is a handcrafted ring made out of a barrel from Woodford Reserve.
And it's pretty. It's like manly, but it's pretty.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
a good looking
ring. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Handcrafted, comes with a certificate of authenticity. Alex did a fantastic job. And so she went a little bit off from what I said I kind of wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And she did an incredible job picking this out because it is so cool because there's a story to tell with it. Like, this is made from Woodford Reserve whiskey barrel.
And it suits you well. Like,
Thank
it
you.
Looks like a Justin ring.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you. I like it. I'm getting used to it, though. Driving's been a little interesting. Just one hand on the steering wheel.
You fiddle with a lot?
All the time. All the time. All right. But the Nashville Predators, I mean, they're still good. Here, well, let me start off with that.
Yep.
There's no need to panic by any means. There are ebbs and flows in every single season. They've just been flowing pretty well since December.
Yep.
And they've hit a little hiccup right here. And it's not an awful hiccup. It depends on how long this type of thing lasts, but only 1 point in their past few games. I mean, kind of starting with that loss to Buffalo last week, but it was a huge win over Colorado in overtime. But that loss to Buffalo, which seemed like a trap game of sorts, then an overtime loss to Boston, at least they got a point there, and then St. Louis, and then Vancouver, back-to-backs there as well. And they have two more home games this month. So it's been interesting for them to be in a four-game, quotes, losing streak.
Yeah.
I know they got a point out of there. But a four-game losing streak after a seven-game back-to-back losses, then a five-game win streak to have a four-game losing streak. That is roller coastering right there.
It is, but it's almost expected, not just from the Predators,
right.
but from any team. I mean, it's never going to happen. You're never going to have a solid season where you don't have a losing streak.
Right.
No team is going to have that. No team that's ever won the Stanley Cup has had that. But I do always, I mean, it's a fan base thing. Every fan base is going to do this. You get used to the flow. You said the ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. People get used to the flow. They love the results of the flow. And then the second that it kind of derails just a little bit, which is normal, people start hitting the button. And I do like to see people. I like to see people hit the button after that first loss
after the
winning streak. But John Hines said it best after last night's game. He said the message is still the same. He said win, lose, good streak, tough streak. It's about what you can control. And in those moments, in those games, against Vancouver, they did not control the things they needed to control. And the outcome is going to be that. You don't get the points. You don't get the win. So the message is still the same. I don't think – I mean, I haven't seen any worry from the Predators players thinking that, oh gosh, we're off track. We're so far off the rails now. But so, I mean, I think that it's just, it's expected. It's, this is going to happen, and it's how you rebound from that. And I don't have any doubt that this team has the capability to rebound from that.
Oh, for sure. And it's just funny to see the comments of, you know, I was, John Hines had me, you know, he,
oh,
I wonder
boy.
If he had me fooled, and now he better get this team's act together. I'm going to want him fired again.
Those are my favorites. Yeah, those are my favorites.
Let's evaluate at the end of the season, because he's not going anywhere during this season. So let's see what happens at the end of the season, whether it's in May or June.
Because if you're any team and you're going to fire a head coach after a couple of losses, nobody's ever going to have a job. Exactly.
When they've been doing well the way they have been. And so let's look at a couple things here. And it's that the Preds have actually started off well in a couple of these games too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's see, against St. Louis, they had a 2-0 lead. And then they allowed 4 unanswered goals.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a way to win games there, especially a divisional opponent. Then a Western Conference opponent, they had a 1-0 lead. Now, that's not as much, but still, they scored first as Philip Tomasino.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the power play. And then they allowed 3 unanswered against Vancouver. And obviously, what we've known, too, is sometimes teams get into penalty trouble. I mean, they allowed a power play goal against Vancouver. They allowed power play goal against St. Louis. It wasn't necessarily put them out of it, but that was the second goal, and that power play goal against St. Louis is what tied the game. That can make a big world of difference there, too.
It could be huge,
if you kill off a penalty versus allowing a power play goal to happen, of what it does for the momentum swing mentally and everything, too. And again, it's been discussed how many times on threads, on social media, about the mental attitude and everything like that. It's like, no team in hockey in the NHL is going to go undefeated.
It doesn't happen.
82 games. They're not going to go undefeated. And yes, it was great to have those win streaks for them, but a team can learn a lot. Like what you were saying, a team can learn a lot from losing games. They can learn a lot. And if I'm not trying to put it in here that you want them to get a losing streak out of the way whenever they can, but here is some adversity for them to face as well because they've been doing so well. Now they're facing a different type of adversity when they've had leads in games. They lost against a team they absolutely should have dominated in Buffalo, who was on their 5th-string goaltender. I mean, and you allow them to win 4-1 at home.
And then you have to sit back after that game and you have to evaluate.
Right.
You have to say, where did we let this go so wrong because of all
early.
The teams? This should not have been the team.
Should not have been one. That was a full-on trap.
Like you said, it gives you that opportunity to correct where you went wrong early on. You're halfway through the season.
And they kind of did against Boston. I mean, they didn't look awful against Boston. They got a point out of Boston. It was in Boston as well, too. And Boston's a very tough team to play against.
Yep.
So now you have a string of games coming up. Obviously, Winnipeg is always going to be a tough one because it's the Jets. And then Detroit, the upstart Detroit Red Wings. Seattle's one of those ones that you better find a way to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
One of those. Edmonton, who's reeling right now, you know, with their pissy players. we'll get to that in the last segment.
We have to.
But it's about how they're going to rebound from the adversity, too. And that's what I'm curious about seeing is in these next few games to close up the month, because they're going to have more games in February than they originally were going to.
Yep.
Thanks to the reschedules happening. But it's going to be how they control themselves with this and can they rebound from. And we've seen little tweaks here and there. But you know one of the things, too, is that Nashville's not one of those teams that's supposed to be losing at home much. They just aren't.
Very true.
The home record is supposed to be absolutely phenomenal. For them to have 2 home losses in a span of 5 days or 6 days, not necessarily something that you know they are okay with. So Winnipeg, Detroit, 2 more home games here. It's going to be big. And Saturday is going to be a huge day in Nashville. I mean, a huge sports day in Nashville. So you know there's going to be some people that are going to be at the Titans game and going right into the Preds game. It's just
there's
going
to be an energy there. I think there will be an energy there for sure.
There will be a certain type of energy. And you know there's been so much great crossover between the teams in the city, from the Titans to Nashville SC to the Predators, of them all supporting each other too. It's going to be one of those days in downtown. There's going to be a buzz around Nashville.
And the players have talked about how infectious that is for them on game day.
Absolutely.
So. I mean, I think if you're going to have a day like Saturday, they needed it after the last few.
Oh, gosh, so. Yeah.
So it's coming at a good time for this team.
It is. It is. Before I have to go to our break, if you have not seen it, the Predators, all those games that got postponed in November and December, they've been rescheduled. And a bunch of them are in February. In fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are in February. 5 of the 7 have been rescheduled. Ooh. One of them was a Saturday, April 2nd game against Washington that got rescheduled for February 15th. So some interesting takes there, but there's going to be some still breaks because the Bridgestone Arena schedule and other team schedules as well, too. There's going to be like a five days off for the Predators. So this is good in terms of just getting healthy because it is going to be a haul to close out the season for so many of these teams. They're just looking at how many back-to-backs. There's even already scheduled in. There's a home back-to-back. It is not that often. Unless you want to include last season, where there was always back-to-backs.
Yeah.
Not that often when you have two home games in back-to-back days. And a Tuesday, Thursday, sure. But a Saturday, Sunday?
It's a lot. They're packed in.
They're packed in. And
shortest
that's
month of the year.
the big concern there is going to be, you know, health and safety of the players, because that is going to be a lot of brutal body hits. They're bodies are going to take so much in these games that's where health is going to be very important when they have a few of these extra days off taking care of themselves. You know, they're probably not going to practice near as much as they were before early in the season, so they're just going to be rolling with it, and you want them to have things figured out by then. And also, you're going to have all this beat up going on right heading into the playoffs. So utilizing your depth is going to be extremely important, and that's what we've seen overall just with players going on COVID protocol and injuries happening. The Predators have shown they do have some depth, which is key. Very, very key. Okay, up next, for the rest of the show, we're going to have Drew Mandel of Illegal Curve to talk about the NHL, the Jets out of Winnipeg. And then after that, Max Hurst, here of 102.5 The Game, who made his NHL debut, filling in for the great Pete Weber. Going to have him on just to talk about that experience, what it was like calling the Nashville Predators game. So Drew Mandel, Illegal Curve, talking Winnipeg Jets up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. And now, you know, it feels a little weird still talking about the Jets because last season didn't happen. Because it was always talking about Predators and Jets and intense rivals in the Central Division. So excited to be talking about the Jets again and to welcome good friends, Illegal Curve Hockey. You've done back and forth as well, just being on each other's show, so it's awesome. We have Drew Mandel joining us from Illegal Curve. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to join you guys. You know how much I love Penalty Box Radio, and like you said, you join us, Justin, so quid pro quo means I got to join you guys.
Absolutely. I'm glad you feel that way.
I love your energy to being here. This is great.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, got to start off strong.
Absolutely. So it has been, it seems like it's been so long since we continually talk Predators and Jets and everything, too. What's going on in Winnipeg? What's new? How's it going on with the interim head coach? And just, I know it's been a while, but how much did that news affect Winnipeg Jets fans, and how surprised were they? And how do you see how this team has kind of recovered from that announcement when it happened?
Well, I mean, I think really it boils down to the writing was on the wall. You could just see that, you know, there wasn't, you know, Paul Maurice had tried all the tricks that he had left to try and get this team where they needed to be, you know, and they just weren't responding anymore. And it's just probably a function of coaches having shelf life. Doesn't mean that he's a bad coach. Doesn't mean that he's a great coach. It was just a function of it had just hit a wall here in Winnipeg. And I think it was really, truly a situation of, you know, you can't fire me, I'm going to quit. Because had they, you know, he quit on a Friday, and the Jets were playing the Washington Capitals that night. And had the result been a negative one, and all the writing was on the wall that it was likely to be a negative one, he probably wouldn't have made it through the weekend anyway. So, you know, I don't know if it was a combination or what the specifics to the conversation were behind the scenes, but, you know, when the announcement came out, there was sort of the initial shock of it. And then it quickly became, okay, yeah, it was clear that this was coming to an end. The team just wasn't responding to him anymore. And, you know, when the coach, you know, they brought in all this new talent, especially on the blue line with Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon in the offseason, and everyone thought that the sky was going to be the limit for the Jets. And what appeared at that time, a lot of people were putting them in the same breath as the Colorado Avalanche at the top of the division. And for a while there this season, the Jets started 9-3-3, and then they went into a tailspin, and nothing Paul Maurice could do could get them out of that tailspin. So it turned out that he had to go as the Jets head coach. Now Dave Lowry comes in as the interim head coach, and the results have been better than not, but it's been so sparked and stopped because of COVID protocol and everything up here. I mean, the Jets, you know, it basically seemed like they were playing one game every week for a while there. So the schedule has been so weird. I mean, that's almost the only word you can use for it, is it's just been so weird because they go, you know, a week and they play once. Like, they played Colorado two Thursdays ago, and then they didn't play again for another week until they played Detroit. Now they're in the midst of a four-game road trip, which is a little bit more normalcy. But Dave Lowry has had success, but it's also been very intermittent. It's been sporadic. The team hasn't been able to sort of generate any momentum or get into any of a routine. And so I think with this four-game road trip that the Jets are on right now, you're going to be able to start to see what this Winnipeg Jets team really is moving forward.
And we know all about a message just not getting through with what happened with Peter Laviolette here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a relatable series, and that's been just the thing that's happened throughout careers for so many coaches. The message just gets lost, even if they're not a bad coach, right? So, and then looking at this too, I mean, looking at the calendar and looking at the Jets' schedule, and you see just the big break that happened at the end of December of just no games being played, basically going on a winter break, like with the schools,
yeah.
And then just all road games here. What do you think that does for just the mentality of the team, and what has it been like for Winnipeg Jets fans to just not have a home game to go to?
Well, I mean, they didn't have a home game because they weren't going to be allowed to attend it because of some attendance restrictions we've had. Now, next week, the Jets are playing at home to the Canucks and to the Florida Panthers. Those will be the first home games really since, I guess there was a Sunday afternoon game December the 19th. That would be the last home game the Jets had against the St. Louis Blues. COVID was not a big problem. Omicron wasn't a big problem in Winnipeg at that point in time, so they had full attendance. Now they're going to play two home games next week in front of 250 people, and then we'll see come February what the attendance numbers are going to look like. Hopefully, maybe they'll be able to get a few more fans in the building. That would be certainly nice, because I think we're all sick, and nobody wants to go back to seeing the empty arena action that we saw last year during the heart of COVID. For Dave Lowry, it's been really interesting, because how often does a coach come in and basically have an entire training camp in which to put his stamp on the team? So that is really an advantage that an interim or a mid-season coaching change you never see. Normally that coach comes in, maybe gets a practice or two before the team gets right back into the meat of their schedule. So it's been very unusual here. The results, like I said, have been better than not for the most part. They've had more wins under Dave Lowry than they had, on average with Paul Maurice, so far this year. But they're, they got to get into that routine. They got to get into that rhythm to sort of see if it's smoke and mirrors, or if they're truly going to climb back into a very competitive Central Division playoff race. And right now, it's just the wild card would be the only thing that's within striking distance for the Jets.
And Drew, digging into this lineup just a little bit, Ehlers just got back to the game after being on COVID protocol. Now he's out after a knee-on-knee injury that happened against Washington. Obviously, this is a huge blow to him, but also to this team, where he is currently tied for third in scoring. So what is a loss like this for this lineup? And is there any player in particular in your mind that you think might step up to the plate, might get an opportunity to kind of show some depth in this roster?
There's nobody that's going to be able to step in and replicate what Nikolaj Ehlers does. Nikolaj Ehlers is a very unique player for the Winnipeg Jets, just in the sense that he's a zone entry machine. There's nobody on the Jets team that probably can consistently carry the puck into the opposition zone and establish possession in the opposition zone as easily and as seamlessly as Nikolaj Ehlers does. So in that sense, it's a huge loss for the Winnipeg Jets. A guy like Cole Perfetti is going to get probably an extended look in the Jets' top six. He had his first career NHL goal last night in Washington, and he hasn't looked out of place. He's been playing on a line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, and the three of them have just looked really well together. I mean, Connor and Dubois have been the Jets' best two forwards all season long, and Perfetti, learning from those two guys and sort of able to do his thing, I think that line will stick together going forward. Now, Blake Wheeler has been out of the Jets lineup since a game in Vancouver back in December. He's set to return, probably not tomorrow unless something drastically changes, but he might return this weekend when the Jets play a back-to-back in Boston and Pittsburgh. So Wheeler, who's not the same Wheeler that he was 3, 4, 5 years ago, but is still a player that the Jets can definitely use, because the depth forwards for the Jets have been tested over the last little while as a result of injury, as a result of COVID protocol. Some guys that you didn't really expect to see them in Jets uniforms this year have been getting that opportunity. Guys like Christian Reichel, who played a big role for the Manitoba Moose, Austin Pagansky, who won an NCAA championship with the University of North Dakota, not far from here in Winnipeg, a number of years ago, but has really sort of been a journeyman NHL player, a tweener between the AHL and the NHL. He's got some time in the Jets lineup in the last few games. Guys like that have been able to get in, and they've actually been able to make a pretty decent impact, but the Jets need, you know, their best players to be in the lineup as much as possible and to really make that top six to carry the team going forward.
And switching gears to the organization as a whole, the Jets have joined Project 11, which is a mental health awareness program that's available to the Manitoba teachers through grade 8, in efforts to just raise awareness about mental health. And that's something that we here at Penalty Box Radio are incredibly passionate about, especially in the sports industry. So I'd love to see a team that's become so involved. They're not only wanting to start the conversation, but they're also wanting to continue to contribute to it because they've committed throughout the rest of January to do this. So just overall, what does that say about this organization as a whole, who is not only committed to, you know, showing their support for just one game and a couple of tweets, but actually committing to the conversation for the rest of the month?
Well, Project 11 is probably one of the most significant things this organization has done, and it started the 11 in Project 11 is in honor of Rick Rippon. Now, when the Jets moved from Atlanta to Winnipeg, they signed Rick Rippon as an unrestricted free agent, if I recall correctly. He had played in Winnipeg for the Manitoba Moose, and then he went to Vancouver because I think he was a Canucks draft pick. This is going back, you know, 11, 12 years ago now, so my memory might be a little foggy. And then, tragically, Rick Rippon took his own life right before the Jets' inaugural season back here in Winnipeg. So, and Rick Rippon and Craig Heisinger, who's a key member of the Winnipeg Jets front office, were very close. And I'm sure it's on YouTube or I'm sure it's online. You can see the relationship in the documentary that the Jets made about Rick Rippon and about Project 11 and how that's sort of a lasting legacy to him. So the Jets have been at the forefront of mental health awareness and mental health initiatives, long before sort of the hockey talks campaign is going on league-wide. So the Jets get full credit. True North organization gets full credit for their commitment to that because, as you said, it's a hugely important thing for an organization to do. Probably, no matter what they ever do on the ice, their legacy and the impact of something like Project 11 will resonate a lot more. And if it saves one life, well, you know how worth it a program like that would be.
That's awesome. That's incredible. And just like you said, legacy off the ice is just incredible there too. Well, Drew, we do have to go, and we appreciate you helping us cover all things Winnipeg Jets. I mean, a very, very in-depth update there on what's going on in Winnipeg, and going to be an interesting matchup as the Predators are on that losing streak right now too, and the Jets just haven't played near as much, but they've got some quality wins as well since then. I'm trying to reel back from what happened against Colorado too, so it's going to be an interesting divisional matchup, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it. At least I made a good impression on your audience, because if they find out that I'm wearing my University of Kentucky t-shirt right now, which I am, they may not love me as much after that. I'm a huge Kentucky fan, so my apologies to everyone in your audience who's maybe a Vandy alum, like Willie Donick, I know, is a Vandy alum. So my apologies to Willie and everybody else for my Kentucky fandom.
Oh, no problem. There are plenty of Kentucky fans in Nashville. It's a very transient SEC city, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks so much for it.
All right. Thanks, Drew. Folks, Drew Mendel, Illegal Curve Hockey. They do a fantastic job covering the Winnipeg Jets, who the Predators are facing tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. So if you want to get caught up on everything there, just follow Illegal Curve Hockey. He's at IC Drew as well. Okay, up next, Max Herz made his NHL debut, calling two Predators games in relief of Pete Weber, who was out on COVID protocol. And so we're going to have Max Herz joining us next to talk about that experience. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, Producer Jared taking care of us. He's doing a fantastic job taking care of us as well. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Before we get on to Max, if you listen to the last segment, Drew Mandel from Winnipeg had to declare his Kentucky basketball fandom. And so I already messaged him about what a gem that was. He's like, it's not every day that a radio host in Winnipeg gets to declare their UK fandom on Nashville radio. So I had to jump on the opportunity.
You have to take every chance that you're given. And I love that he did that.
Had to take every chance. Now, from UK basketball to Vanderbilt basketball and more, Max Herz, who is, you know, well known here at 102.5 The Game, but also made his NHL debut doing radio play-by-play for the Nashville Predators last week in relief of Pete Weber. He's joining us right now. Max, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. Long time no talk. Glenn especially.
I know.
Justin, married man. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate
that. He's looking very married now.
Have that glow.
How did you guys not have Alex as a guest this week to talk about the wedding or Gover or somebody?
Oh gosh. We'll have to get to that because Gover, I'm sure, does have plenty of stories with how he prepares. I was like, here's what you're gonna have to do to officiate the wedding. Good luck. He's like, what? well, Max. I mean, Max and I go pretty good back, pretty far back. I mean, he produced for us as well here at Penalty Box Radio, and also did play-by-play calling Vanderbilt hockey games with Penalty Box Radio too. And that seems like it's so long ago. It feels like it's only a couple of years, but it's been a while since you called those games, Max. I mean, and those were awesome. I know you got really busy and everything too, but what was that like calling those college hockey games, especially club college hockey games here in Nashville?
Oh, it was so fun. And I mean, that was a lot of those were my sophomore year of college, so 2014, 2015 winter. And at that point, I hadn't done a ton of play-by-play, period. I was really just getting started with Vanderbilt soccer and a couple of other things with the student radio station at Vandy. But those games were so fun because I had just kind of – my relationship with Vandy hockey started my freshman year, like the first week. Excuse me, they have like the big club fair where every club on campus just puts out a table. And all the club sports teams were there, and it was like, oh, Vanderbilt hockey. And I was like, well, I don't play hockey, but I like hockey, and I'm planning on working with the sports teams here. Like, can I get somebody's number and come help out? Like, I don't even know what I had in mind, but I ended up running the scoreboard and keeping the book for a lot of the games my freshman year. And a combination of you, Pat and Fuquay, and Zach were calling those games at the time, and I got to fill in for a couple when Zach and Patton were both out of town, and do a couple in some of the tournaments when we had eight teams at Ford Ice, the literal first year that Ford Ice Center was open,
right?
which was so fun to see that from the beginning, and it was so great. Yeah, I was really good friends with a lot of the guys on the team and still am to this day, and a couple of them were texting me and hitting me up after last week, and I got to tell them you played in the last hockey game I announced. So,
well, and so folks don't even realize. I mean, yeah, that was the last hockey game you announced, but I mean, so many other sports you've done as well too. So the talent's always been there. It's been just great to see your come up from that as well with all your experience. But I want to make sure that if they didn't hear it, that the listeners hear your call though, the big call against Colorado.
Roman Josi enters the zone. To the right side, Ryan Johansson. 4-on-3 for the Preds. Johansson to Josi. To the left side, Mikhail Granlund. Johansson's in front. One-timer by Josi. Rebound scores! Preds win! Matt Duchesne with the game-winning goal!
Not a lot of glitz and glamour on that power play. Get it back to Roman Josi and let him bombs away. The shot gets blocked, but it goes right on to Duchesne's stick. And Duchesne slams it in the back of the net for the win.
So, Max, that was a pretty incredible goal call. And for your first NHL game, you get to call an overtime winner in a playoff-like atmosphere. What was running through your mind?
The adrenaline rush was unbelievable. And I was just worried about if anything going too fast, which I don't think I did. Maybe I did it at times kind of in like back-and-forth segments, but once the puck was in play, I just kind of was in my natural cadence, which listening back to it the next day and a couple more times since, listening to the whole game back a couple of times since, it felt great. I was really pleased with how I did. I was fortunate that the two games I did were in the order they were in, I think, just because I knew the Avs much better than I knew the Sabres, as the average neutral hockey fan would, I think. I mean, they're prepping for the Avs. There was really only one person on that team I couldn't really have told you everything about coming into the game. It was easy to learn names and numbers, and I think that just helped me in the first game. And obviously it helps that it's a great game, but it's not even that it was a close or high-scoring game that helped me. It's just that it was a game with a lot of action. Like, it didn't even have to be goals. It was a lot of offensive zone time for both teams. There wasn't a lot of build-up time. There wasn't a lot of hanging around in the neutral zone, which there ended up being a lot of on Thursday, so I got to kind of call two very different games, regardless of whether the Preds won them or they lost them, and they split them, so they were different in that manner, too. But, yeah, it was a hell of an adrenaline rush. The crowd size of 17,000, however many, fills up Bridgestone Arena was, I'm 99% sure, twice the size of any crowd of any game I'd done play-by-play for before, which was a neutral site Vandy women's basketball game against UConn at the Mohegan Sun Casino, which I think was in the 8,000, 9,000 range in a 10,000-seat arena. So the adrenaline rush was unbelievable. Hal was unbelievable. Everyone we work with at the station was unbelievable. And it was a dream come true Tuesday, and then a dream come true again on Thursday.
And Max, I just want to go back to the moment that you found out that you were going to be calling these games. In that moment, what did that feel like for you? And then also, did you have any pregame nerves? And if so, how did you handle those? Because this is obviously a huge moment.
Yeah, I was not really nervous. I don't think that's the way I would describe it. I felt very well prepared, which when you go into calling a game not feeling prepared, you would almost feel more unprepared than anything else. I would never describe myself as nervous before a game. And yeah, I felt well prepared more than anything else. It's much easier to research the Colorado Avalanche than it is like the UT Martin baseball team or some of the teams that I've announced playing Vandy. So before I found out I was doing these games and that Pete had COVID, like, I could have told you plenty of things about Nathan MacKinnon. Like, I know what to expect from Nathan MacKinnon. I'm going to know who Nathan MacKinnon is when he has the puck, and he's going to do some unbelievable things. So just kind of my goal really was to keep it as simple as possible, especially on radio as compared to TV. Who has the puck? Where's the puck? And not just who has the puck, what team has the puck, which in hockey you can kind of lose track of sometimes on radio because it goes back and forth so much. So possession was a big thing, and then the big thing beyond that was what zone is the puck in, just offensive zone, defensive zone, neutral zone. I tried to stay on top of those as best as I could, and I was really happy with how I was able to do that. And to your first question, I found out on Sunday before the games on Tuesday and Thursday, so I actually got a text from Chase McCabe, the newly minted program director of 102.5, who I had actually had a conversation with the previous week, basically saying like, hey, I know this has already been vocalized a little bit, but Chase had just taken over the position from Ryan Porth, and I said, like, I want to make sure, like, if there's a fill-in, I would love to be the person who does that. So he and Willie recommended me as the flagship station to a couple of officials from the Predators, including one of whom that I had never met, and was very trusting in Chase and Willie. He did not even feel the need to speak to me before giving Chase the okay to offer it to me. So both sides, the Preds and the station, were really trusting in me, and I felt great about it. And there are a lot of teams that have had their AHL announcers fill in, and that's a no-brainer. But thankfully for me, as you guys know, our AHL team is not quite next door. I know you guys have Aaron on all the time. I was fortunate in many respects to get the opportunity and to be trusted as a local person and someone who, I don't know, there are a lot of people that could have been picked. So I was very fortunate.
And you killed it, man. I mean, you killed it. Again, Max Herz, a sports broadcaster, reporter, and producer for 125 The Game. You've also probably seen him on SEC Network Plus and MyTV 30, Friday Night Rivals. I mean, he's been in this city for so long doing so much with sports, but this is a huge, huge step. But What's one thing, if you're taking away one thing you learned about this, because it's one thing doing college and obviously doing all these different types of things, but when you go to the pro level and everything too, with a heightened aspect of, you know, what the listenership is and doing it on radio like that, what's one thing that you learned that maybe you didn't know about before, especially because I know you produce a lot, so you know the back end, how that works and everything too, but is there anything that stood out to you that you learned during these two games and this experience that maybe you didn't think about before?
That's a good question. Nothing really jumps out to me, but I think the fact that I have been on the production end of these radio broadcasts a lot really did help me. And for anyone filling in, there's going to be multiple things you have to think about that you have to process that the person who does this every day doesn't really have to process because they know how it works. But for me, the format of the broadcast, when breaks happen, what things sound like, what goes where, those things were pretty automatic for me just because I've been in the studio you guys are in right now editing highlights for probably triple-digit games over the last four Pred seasons for Pete and Hal alongside Ian, Elijah, Ryan, Chase, whoever else is in there producing. So that was definitely helpful for me and I think was part of the case for me to do it as well. At least I would like to think it was something that plays in my favor, and it definitely did as the game played out, but I'm trying to think as I talk about a good answer to your question. And I don't know, nothing huge is jumping out at me. I think just I really feel like I didn't want to bring too much information in. Like, I just brought in a sheet with everybody's name, jersey number, which I didn't really have to look at much, thankfully. And if I did, that would have slowed me down. But just where they were from, number of NHL seasons for guys who had been on previous teams, how many seasons they'd been on previous teams, and then basic goals, assists, points. And I didn't even end up using most of that. Like, it's hockey radio is really just names, who has it and where. And I almost gave too much background info at times by giving any at all. It's just so fast. And why would I be the person providing filler when we have Hal to do that, who's as good as it gets to give legitimate in-depth analysis of the game, as he always does.
You know, you make a good point there. That's what I was thinking too. It's like, well, Max knows because he produces. I mean, the amount of knowledge that radio producers have when you know how to run the boards, I'm extremely jealous that I don't have that knowledge, because having the knowledge of how it works behind the scenes helps with timing, helps with cadence, helps with so much, having that knowledge. So I mean, it just goes to show too that for those that are listening too, that have an interest in this, if you have an opportunity to intern or to run boards, take that, because you learn so much that can go far in your career. Would you agree with that assessment there, Max?
Yeah, definitely. Align yourself with a 24/7 week-long, year-round sports brand. Because there's been so much I've gotten to do at 102.5, primarily with our team partners, like the Predators and like Nashville SC and other places like that. Whereas I'm the producer for a game, but then when somebody's needed to step up and do something, I'm the first call. And I know what everything is supposed to sound like. I know what everything is supposed to look like. And just all around, it's great because and I've done this on the TV side, too, like for games. I've official statted. I've been the associate producer for a lot of television broadcasts at Vandy. I've run the score bug. So I've seen a lot of these things from a lot of different angles, and doing stuff like that too is a great way for people in sports media to make connections, because I can walk up to anybody I want. Like, I can walk up to Pete Weber, which I did, by the way, the first time I ever met him in 2014, and say, I'm a college broadcaster. Like, let's shoot the breeze for a little, but it's Pete would talk to anybody.
Right.
He's the best. But the best way to cold meet people is to serve a legitimate function working with them. And when you're in a production role, you're able to not only speak to somebody, but also prove your value to them. And that sets you up for something like this. But I love doing off-air work. I really, really like it.
Well, it's definitely set you up for success. So last question before I have to let you go, just because of all your work you've done in baseball as well, too. If you had to choose a walk-up song, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one. I have some written down. So the one I would use is probably not going to be a song you guys have heard of, but I really like the intro of it. It's called Spaceships and Rockets. It's by Boz, who's one of my favorite rappers, and it's kind of like a remix of like a club song he did.
All right.
So that would be it, my hook. yeah, I didn't used to have one, but I've got a couple.
You
I might use some some Mac Miller, too. There's some Mac Miller beats I like. So it would probably be just like a hip-hop hook or something like that, like 10, 15 seconds of it.
All right. All right. That works. That works. I know I'm not familiar with that, but now I'm going to have to go get familiar with
it. Can I use the Monster Block song? That's my thing.
What a great way to end an interview. Max, we appreciate you joining us so much. Just thank you for everything you've done for us as well, and congratulations on the opportunity, and hope it leads to more in the future for you.
Yeah, and thank you to your guys' listeners who may have listened last week. I had a lot of Preds fans tweet at me and follow me, some of whom I've met, but many of whom I haven't met, and I imagine many of them are PBR listeners. So thank you to you guys and your crew, as always.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Max Herz, everybody. Did a fantastic job. You can follow him on Twitter at Max Herz Talks. You're going to see and hear more of him in the future. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Has a great quick wit, so much knowledge about sports in general, about so many different sports, and that is going to go so far in sports nowadays.
That call, I mean, his voice, everything, that call was, that gave you chills. He did a great job.
Absolutely. Okay, up next, we know plenty of questions came in just about the Preds, about so many different types of things, and about a certain media interaction up in Edmonton. We're going to cover that up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. And we're just going to... We had plenty of questions. I love it. I really appreciate our listeners because you provided so many questions and topics.
Yep, and the engagement on Twitter, the responses.
We really appreciate it.
Y'all do it every week. You nail it.
All right. Well, let's go with this one. This one comes from Doyle. Granted, they've racked the shooting percentages for half a season, but how sustainable are the rates for Forsberg at 22.9, Janot at 19.4, and Johansson at 18.6? Halfway through the season, I know Forsberg hasn't played as many games because injury and out on COVID protocol, missed a few there. And Johansson was out on COVID protocol for a couple as well. But halfway through the season is actually a pretty good instance of where these players are at shooting percentage-wise. They can't necessarily, I don't think, maintain that high. But I can't see it dipping that far either because halfway through the season, overall 41 games, let's say that each of these guys have played at least 35 games. That's a good enough sample size to see where they're shooting at right now. And because I think it comes to shot quality, especially Johansson.
Yeah, and it's enough of a sample size to show that this is not just a fluke. This is not just, they're just on some hot streak. The skill and the talent is there.
Right.
But whether it's sustainable to stay that high, like you said, I don't really know that you can expect that out of most professional athletes because you're going to have those ebbs and flows, not just with the team, right, but a player individually as well. But the skill and the talent is still there for them to still hover around that.
And Johansson doesn't shoot it as much either, so he can have a high shooting percentage because he doesn't take as many shots. So he's probably the one that's probably closest to being able to maintain it because he just doesn't shoot the puck as often as he probably could. And it's not it could be a better thing if you'd shoot him more because he'd probably put more pucks in. But he's a great setup guy, and that's what we've been seeing so far this season. This one comes from Brandy. How was the wedding?
How was the wedding?
Wedding was great.
Tell us everything. That was what I did when I first walked in today.
The wedding was great. We had some snow. Pretty much everyone was able to make it. It was a very, very, very small ceremony down in Columbia, Tennessee, at what was her family church. But it's Alex's family church, which is awesome that her grandfather helped build a lot of things in this church. And the cemetery there has plenty of her mom's side buried there, too. So it was just really neat. We were the first wedding in that building since it got renovated into a venue.
Aww, that's so special.
Very, very special. So that was really awesome.
And especially all the family ties on her side. That's
special, the family ties on her side.
That's huge.
Jeremy K. Gover, the K stands for knowledge, who you've heard plenty of times on these airwaves. He actually officiated the wedding, and he did a fantastic job as well and made us laugh, which was great too. And then good friend Cameron Gumpy has been with me on podcast and Penalty Box Radio. Played the role of best man as well. So it was a fantastic wedding. Alex killed it on her wedding vows. She just showed me up completely, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
That was her moment to shine.
It was definitely her moment to shine. Okay, this one, we have a couple questions regarding this. DJ Burnside, why are you so pissy regarding the question to Leon Draisaitl? And then this one comes from Johnny. What's the most awkward question you've ever witnessed being asked in person? I love the Montreal story still when they're hung up on not muting themselves. That's a great one. During when the Weber-Subban trade happened, there's a radio station out of Montreal that did not mute themselves on the call, the conference call, and so they just shut it down. But I would say the most awkward question, and I love him. He's definitely one of my good friends, but Christopher Martel.
Oh, gosh.
And if you've heard this, you know where it's going. This was leading up into an elimination game to where you had to win. And Chris asked Mike Fisher, so would you call this a must-win game?
I do remember that now.
The look that Fisher gave him. Yeah.
Oh, it just hurts to think about. I would be so uncomfortable if I witnessed it happen. I would have to close my eyes.
And Martel just ran with it.
He's so good like that.
He handled it like a champ. But it's just one of those things like, oh, buddy. It was great, though.
That's a good one.
Okay. But yes, the situation in Edmonton is really interesting. And I know lots of journalists have taken the side of the journalist. Mm-hmm. And a lot of fans have taken the side of Leon Draisaitl. Here's what's been interesting is that during the pandemic, we're seeing so many interviews having been conducted through Zoom, to where you're not doing one-on-ones, you don't have your scrums where it's in person, to where you can have some interactions in person to be able to work things out. It's all digital, and you can't even see always the person that's asking you the question, especially in the player side. Like journalists, we can see the player, but they can't see us. We don't have our cameras on because they were doing it for a little while, but in Nashville, especially where we could go down and the players would be there at a table. And so we'd actually be seeing each other in person, which was a huge step in a right direction. But then obviously COVID protocols came in and went back to like what it has been for the past two seasons, which is through Zoom. So everyone is hearing these interactions take place. And sometimes there are journalists that push to try to get something out for their story and everything, to try to dig down a little bit deeper. You wouldn't have this come out if it's a one-on-one where someone's asking after a practice some hard questions. I think both sides, I mean, moron, you don't even be calling a player pissy. There's other ways to word a question to try to get something out or to express your frustration with not getting everything out there. But we have lost a lot of personal interaction right now, too, and understandably so. But in the locker room, we'd have the opportunity to be able to work things out and push for questions and go from there. So that's one of the missed things right now, too, and why we're seeing some of these interactions I think take place even more is because of that, because it's digital and you're not able to
see
the person's face.
You're lacking that human
interaction. Yeah, you're lacking the human interaction. So I was very curious right there, too. Let's see. This one comes from Russell. Which member of the Preds is most likely to pull a Draisaitl when talking to the media? Well, he's not a current member anymore. That definitely would have been James Neal.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see the smirk, too, the little side smile.
Absolutely.
I mean, he didn't really – that was the thing. Draisaitl didn't really say anything.
No, he didn't.
He just stayed quiet, and you had a look of like
right.
one-word answer, and I'm done.
Right. This one comes from Jonah. How does Glenn feel about the newest Dolly Parton track, Big Dreams Invaded Jeans?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good question, Jonah. I mean, Dolly does no wrong. Happy birthday, Dolly. Today is her day. But yeah, there's like a lyric in there that's like, don't know what to expect, but what is it? I don't know what to expect. I'm a little scared, but what the heck? I love it. That's the motto to live by.
And happy birthday,
and
Dolly Parton. She is our
76
our Parton,
today.
Our Parton saint.
Yeah, our Parton saint. Oh, God, that's good. I think she's 76 today.
She's incredible. The work that she's done just through philanthropy and taking care of just people throughout just, all over the world.
I was about to say, people in general.
People in the community.
People of the world she
what
takes
a way,
care
a great
of.
Way to end it. I'm sorry if we didn't get to all your questions. We do have to go. But thank you so much to our guest. Thank you so much to Jared for taking care of us and for Glenn Blackwell. This is Justin Bradford. Thank you so much for listening to Penalty Box here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.